Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, we are live. Welcome. It is the first stream of April, the first stream of the week, and it is a Speak Free Radio stream, so it's going to be more of a podcast format today. Going to be doing less of the visuals, although they will be there. We're actually going to do another Michael Sugru analysis stream. I've really been enjoying watching these videos and discussing them with the chat room, and I think it seems like generally, the audience seems to like that as well, so I think that's kind of a good thing to go along with today. Welcome, everybody. We got quite a few people in here. I just want to let everybody know, if you are on GTV, it seems like we're having chat room problems yet again on GTV, unfortunately. So if you guys do want to chat today and you want to participate in the discussion, Odyssey is the only place to do so. So hop over on Odyssey. Again, it's odyssee.com. And the account is Logos Revealed. Okay, you can find me over there. We're also live on Speak Free Radio today, as it is Tuesday, which is the Speak Free Radio day. Be live from 5 to 7 tonight. That's the time slot that we have for Speak Free Radio. So welcome, everyone. We got quite a few people in the chat already. Let's say hello to some people. We got Full Fingers, Randall. We got Ketzer in here. Welcome, brother. V-Lunk, hello, and Ethno-Nationalist, as well as Maybe Next Time. Welcome, guys. I hope everybody is having a good start to the month and a good start to the week as well. Okay, let's pull up my video here. Before we get into the discussion, I'm going to do the usual, kind of go over the schedule a little bit for you guys. Let everyone know what to expect for this week. We have a more eventful week this week than we've had in quite a while. Last couple weeks have been more casual streams, just kind of doing brief discussions or reading book reports, things like that. It'll be a little bit more active this week for the show. So we're taking tomorrow off, not going to do a show tomorrow. On Thursday, we are going to be having a pro-white book author on the show. I'm going to be interviewing him. He is probably lesser known in the scene. I don't think I've seen him interviewed on anyone's show yet, or really talked about too in depth. So we're going to try to promote him a little bit. I'm about three quarters into his work. I have to say I'm very impressed. That deep Aryan spirit is really solid in this book. You can tell it's put very heavily into his artistic thinking. So I am quite impressed with this book. The name of the book is Pancake Guard. Now, this guy has he's got social media accounts and things of the sort, but unfortunately, his author name is different than his socials name. So I'm going to wait till he comes on the show and allow him to kind of express what he goes by and what his books are. It's a fiction book, but it puts spiritual philosophy into the story, which is something that you really don't see nowadays. He's not afraid to use some words that society is uncomfortable with nowadays. He says things like Aryan and talks about how the white man is going extinct and things like this. It's a very, very interesting book. It's definitely something that I typically would not read. I'm not a fiction reader. But I'm impressed by this, because as much as it is a fiction and you're reading a bit of a story, at the same time, you're getting a lot of kind of racial or cultural references in here that you're not going to see in modern books. It just doesn't exist. So this book is on Amazon. I'm sure he probably has PDF links as well. So I will talk to him about that once we have him on. That's going to be this Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, so bit of an evening stream. We don't do that too often, but should be a good show. I'm excited to do that. Obviously, as usual, we're going to be joining G-Man on Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern. We're going to do his Speak Free Radio show with him. And I'm actually going to be doing a show myself at 6 p.m. Eastern afterwards. Let me put that down right now. Okay, there that is. Saturday, this is the show I'm most excited for the week. I think this is going to be a really good one. At 4 p.m. Eastern, this coming Saturday, we're going to be doing a roundtable. We haven't done one of those in over a month. It's going to be myself, Andreas, Johansson from the Nordic Frontier podcast, Nick from Night Nation Review, Alfred Schaefer, we just had him on this most recent week with an interview show, and My Fashy Bookshelf, we just, again, have to get set up with some kind of a platform that he'll be able to use. I'm going to do my absolute best to do that because I really want to have him on board as well. I think he would be a good person to chat with specifically on this topic that we're choosing, which is remoralization. We're going to be talking about how to actually take this demoralized, apathetic population of today who Hitler describes as the lukewarm, right? This group of people that they don't really care one way or the other. They're mostly indifferent. They don't want to get involved in things. How to take those people and kind of light a fire under their ass, so to speak. Get these people up and moving. Get them motivated to do something a little bit better for themselves and for the society as a whole, because obviously we're not in the greatest spot right now. So there is that. Okay. Favor to ask for anybody that's in the Odyssey chat. Does it look like we are live on Speak Free Radio? It doesn't look like it on my end. Might just be me. I'm not sure. If somebody could just look on Speak Free Radio, it's just, again, speakfreeradio.com, and let me know if we're live over there. It really doesn't look like it at the moment. Let me see. Speak Free Radio? Oh, no, we're there. We're live. It's just our logo isn't up there for some reason. Okay, yeah, we are live. Alrighty, sorry about that. Looks like we're good. Okay, so, anyways, we're going to get into the show in just a second here, so just want to, Sunday, I forgot to mention, Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern, we're going to be doing our co-stream with Napalm. I can't remember who went on whose show last. We always alternate, so one of us will be going on the other's show. I'm not sure which one exactly yet. Okay, so for those on Speak Free Radio, again, if you guys do want to participate in the chat today, Odyssey is the only place that it's available. And, the socials are always up there. We've got the Gab, the Twitter, Odyssey, and GTV as well. And Telegram if you want to reach out to me privately. As well as my email account, which is just logosrevealed88@gmail.com. That's everything to kind of promote to start. One more thing. Ketzer is in the chat. Welcome, Ketzer. I see you. Ketzer is running a promotion for the show today. He offered to match all contributions to the show on his own behalf. So if we make $50 in contributions, he'll match that $50. If we make $100, he'll match the $100. All the way up to $500. So it's a very, very kind offer on his part to encourage some contributions to the show. So thank you, Ketzer, for that. If we can get the Romans up in the chat for Ketzer for offering something so kindly. And I will tack on and add my own offer as well. If we fill this bar up, since Ketzer is going to be doing matching, if we fill this bar, I will do a bonus show tomorrow. So I'm not supposed to stream tomorrow, but if we fill this bar, I'll do an extra show tomorrow for the simple fact that you guys have been so supportive lately. I will do an extra show if we fill this bar today, okay, which would mean we'd have to hit 200 total, and that'll be between Odyssey and Speak Free Radio. I'm not going to be picky about where it comes from. I know the Odyssey does not contribute to the bar, obviously, unfortunately. So I wish I could get a way to do that. That would make it a little bit easier to organize things, but that's okay. Full Fingers, starting off strong with a $10 investment, guys. Can we get the Romans in the chat for Full Fingers? Thank you, my friend, so much. I really appreciate that. And again, I just want to mention Ketzer will be matching at the end of the show. So if you don't see him matching, you know, during the middle, don't be concerned that he's not going to follow through. Ketzer certainly is a man of his word who I trust. So I know he will be matching, again, all the way up to $500. A very, very, very kind gesture on his behalf. Okay, that is it for promotions. Now we can get into the show. Let's see here. Let's pull this up. Okay. Alrighty. Alright, so today we're going to be watching another Michael Sugrue video, who gives, again, probably the best philosophical analysis of any books out of anyone. I always like these discussions. So today's discussion is going to be about Marcus Aurelius and his book, The Meditations, which is actually a book that we read in the book club. I think this was, I want to say, not last month, but the month before. I can't remember if it was the January or the February book, but I know we read it, and we had a lot of good reports on it and a lot of good feedback. Everybody seemed to really enjoy the book. So he's going to be discussing that book, and obviously more in depth. He'll be talking about the Stoic ideal, talking about Stoicism as a whole, what it actually means. So if you are new to this show, well, actually, if you're a regular watcher, you'll know that I talk about Stoicism on this show very often. I'm a strong believer in Stoicism, and I think it's something that more men today need to be following, need to be jumping on board with. Because I feel if everybody was doing that, or if more people were doing that, we would see these depression rates and anxiety rates and people being all flustered in the modern age. I think we would see that drastically decrease on a tremendous scale. So we're definitely a big proponent of Stoicism on this stream. Let me just pull up my other tab really quick so I have it sitting here. That way I can have Entropy open. Don't forget, if you guys do want to contribute towards the goal today, Entropy and Odyssey are the two ways to do so, as well as, obviously, the Bitcoin wallets. So if that does happen, I'll factor that in, although we don't really get much over there, so I'm not even really going to talk about it. Entropy will do the live alert on the screen right there, and Odyssey, you can obviously just donate straight through. There is no alerts or anything for that, unfortunately. All right, let's get started here. You guys let me know that the audio is okay. All right.
After the death of Socrates and the breakup of Greek culture that resulted from the Peloponnesian War, Socratic philosophy went into a decline and fragmented into several pieces. And the fragments of Socratic philosophy make up the body of Hellenistic philosophy. What I mean by Hellenistic philosophy is the subsequent developments of Greek philosophy, which take their cue from the Socratic approach to philosophy. Yet they don't have all the component parts of Socratic philosophy. They usually lack the wit. They almost always lack the poetry. Occasionally, they absorb some of the ethical doctrines or epistemological doctrines. But the ones who come after Socrates never really live up to the Socratic ideal. The three main fragments.
Video audio is a bit higher than mine. Okay, I'll turn it down a little bit. Thank you. I do appreciate that. It's good to have it balanced. Let me know if this is any better, okay?
Fragments that Socratic philosophy breaks into are called Stoicism, Epicureanism, and Skepticism. And these are the most important Hellenistic outgrowths from Socratic philosophy. And since Rome...
Okay, so again, we have Stoicism, Epicureanism, and Skepticism. He's going to discuss this a little bit, and then I'll jump deeper once he kind of brings these up one by one. Obviously, we talk about Stoicism very often. It's discussed... Probably, I've had at least 10 shows where we go into Stoicism and the Stoic ideal. Epicureanism is something I almost never discuss because I'm very against Epicureanism. And then we'll get Skepticism as well, which I'm not a proponent of. However, it's not as negative to me as Epicureanism. So we're going to discuss all three of these pretty far in depth today. And why they're important, right? Why they're necessary for human happiness.
The Roman Empire, in particular, is the political entity which ultimately dominates the Mediterranean basin and absorbs and inherits the tradition of Greek philosophy. Most of the Hellenistic branches of philosophy are developed in connection or with reference to, either politically or intellectually, with Roman culture. And the first of these developments is hedonism, or Epicureanism, named after a guy named Epicurus. And what Epicureanism says is that pleasure is the only good, and that the happy man is the one that has a great many pleasures, but no corresponding pains. And there is potentially a way of deriving that from Socratic philosophy. If you would take the idea of Socratic prudence, the man who drinks a little bit in order to get a certain degree of pleasure, but then not so much as he will cause himself a hangover or cause himself some corresponding pain, he's being prudently Socratic, picking and choosing his pleasures in such a way that he does not generate any corresponding pains. You can see possibly how people who were not entirely developed to the, who were not entirely committed to the Socratic conception of the soul and of virtue, might want to derive that sort of justification for the pursuit of pleasure from the Socratic dialogues.
So, Epicureanism again is pleasure driven. It's pleasure based. Now, you have to understand, back in this society that these were being preached in, this was actually a good society. So. Many men were disciplined, had good morals, so you could discipline those pleasures, right? Again, as he said, you know, maybe drinking a little bit, but not too much that you're causing a problem with it. Maybe, you know, people today might say something like smoking a little weed and not causing a problem with it. Now, here's why I'm against this and why I think this is a problem. We don't live in a disciplined society. We don't live in a society where many people are teaching discipline, preaching discipline on the youth. So, therefore, when the youth tries these pleasures, they're almost always going to fall into habits, right? So a pleasure is one thing, and then it ends up turning into a habit, right? And we see this with everything, right? It's pornography, drugs, alcohol, video games. All these things can be momentary pleasures. But for humanity, because they're so pleasuresome, they end up becoming subconscious habits. And when they become a habit, it's no longer a pleasure, now it is a vice, right? So, again, it's not to say that, oh, if a guy picks up a bottle of beer once a year, he's doing a vice, right? But if this pleasure is becoming something that is persistent and consistent, then now it's become, okay, this is a vice. This is something that he no longer has control over. So now you become a psychological slave to that pleasure, which means you no longer have free will, right? If you feel like you can't get through your day without a bottle of beer, or you can't get through your day without smoking a joint, well, now you're at a point where you are a slave to this desire. And that's the problem with, especially in modern society, with pleasures. Because in modern society, there is no discipline, right? We don't have strong male figures that will shame you out of these behaviors, right? So let's go back 80 years in this country. You know, if somebody was even just smoking weed, people around him would be like, what the hell are you doing? Like, this is awful. You don't do that, right? And they would tell him, no, this is bad. He would be morally shamed by society for behaving in this manner. Now, today, people they're letting their 16-year-old kid light up a joint in his bedroom, and they don't care. So because there's no discipline, these pleasures, people aren't recognizing them as pleasures. They're recognizing them as normalities. So they go overboard with them, and then again, over time, they end up becoming these subconscious habits. And then, well, you see what this is producing in society. You're going to get moral decay, you're going to get depression, you're going to get just an overall unhappy populace. Suicide rates go up, production rates go down, creativity is slacking, because creative minds are educated minds, right? No creative person is a simpleton. Right? No, we don't ever look at a guy who's done something extremely creative or new or insightful and go, oh, that guy's an idiot. You know, how did he figure that out? All people that are creative, that have done beneficial things for society, have been smart to some degree, right? And to be smart, you have to have knowledge. And to have that knowledge, you can't be sitting around doing things that are pleasuresome all day. You have to be diluting some of that time in a disciplined manner to things that are better for you. Right? It's a lot easier to sit up and light a joint and play video games than it is to sit around and read a book. So a lot of people are going to go to the former rather than the latter. And then it becomes habit. Now, a disciplined person will eventually say, okay, I like to do that from time to time, sit and play video games, smoke weed, but now I need to get this book read because this needs to be done for me. Now, the more you can do that, the more you can dilute your behaviors to that harder thing, that more strugglesome thing, the more powerful of a man you're going to be, the more able you will be to overcome hardship, the more able you will be to promote better values onto society. Collectively, you're going to be a better person. So The Stoic ideal would preach against Epicureanism. It says we should avoid these pleasures as much as possible because the more we avoid them, the better not only are we, but the better society is. And the better all these things are, the happier we'll all be in turn, right? So you might be momentarily happy with your Epicurean desires. However, with your Stoic discipline, you will be more happy long term. On the full scale, because everyone will be happy, right? Meanwhile, today, like, let's say you're happy in your own life. Like, everywhere you go, people are depressed. They're miserable. You go to the gas station. Like, you go to the grocery store. It's like, hey, how did you find everything okay? They're scanning it. They barely acknowledge that you're there. And then they finish scanning, and it's, have a good one. Yeah, you know, they really meant that, right? These people are they're depressed. They're not happy. So It's better to live in a happy and well-formed society where everyone is happy. So we got some people in the chat room. Yeah, I agree, Dark. Again, what you have to realize that all of these third worlders that are coming into our nations right now, these people don't have this moral scale, right? This disciplined moral scale that we do. And that's just simply because it's not ground into their culture at all. They don't have philosophical roots or any kind of religious background that brings them to have that morality. Yes, it will certainly grow worse as well. It's not something that will get better unless we have, again, a masculine power that puts this, imposes this disciplined moral will onto people. That's what's necessary. We need that today. There is no masculinity. Again, they call it the patriarchy, right? Ooh, the evil patriarchy. The patriarchy is what kept people in line. It kept them behaving correctly. So it might be seen as a bad thing by some, but in the long run, without having that moral structure of men that are willing to push their convictions onto people, we get a undisciplined society, and again, as we've discussed, we see where this goes. Welcome, Vindicated, Druidic, Mice, Andy. I see we got a lot of new people coming in. I just want to promote again, just as a brief reminder, since we have more people filling into the chat, Ketzer has offered to match all contributions to the show today. So anybody who contributes, Ketzer will match that at the end of the show, all the way up to $500. So don't forget, guys, if you do want to contribute, all the descriptions are down in the all of the links, sorry, are in the description below. And if we fill that bar up at the bottom corner of the screen today, I will do a bonus show tomorrow. I'll go live tomorrow. I'll do an extra stream. That means I'll be live every single day this week, except for obviously I didn't go live Monday. But every day this week I will be live if we fill that bar today. Let's continue forward.
A second alternative, again, a minor alternative, fragment of Socratic philosophy is called skepticism. Socrates, throughout most of the dialogues, I would emphasize the word most rather than all, says that he doesn't know anything. Part of the Socratic irony is this posture of acting as if he's really an ignorant man when in fact he is wise, in saying that he knows nothing and thus never trying to teach people by directly making declarative sentences. For the most part, Socrates teaches by question and answer. Socrates helps people to articulate and to realize what's already buried within their soul. When Socrates does that, when he's in that skeptical mode, he says, I myself know nothing. All I do is inquire into things. I'm the eternal inquirer. I'm the patron saint of rational inquiry. And it's possible to see, particularly within the context of the Roman Empire, how skepticism might develop from that Socratic stance of knowing nothing. Remember that the Roman Empire is a heterogeneous mix of peoples and cultures and religions and philosophical positions. And after being forced to encounter one cosmogonic myth after another, one theory of religion after another, one theory of morals after another, sophisticated Romans, sophisticated Hellenistic thinkers might well come to the conclusion that Lucian the Skeptic did, which is that no one really knows the right path. No one even knows if there is a right path. The best we can do is say that the pretensions made by the various schools of philosophy are just that, pretensions. Skepticism, while it may be rather negative, is at least right. We can be certain about what we do not know. All right.
So skepticism follows more along this line of it's up for interpretation, right? So let's not have a strong opinion on things. Again, this is something that I can't fall in line to, because it's hard to have faith in something if you don't know, right? Or it's hard to be convicted about something if you don't know. So, you know, like, we could, a skeptic might say, well, I don't know if transgenderism is worse than being a regular, normal, biologically driven human being. I don't know. You know, I guess that's something to open up and think about. And I'm not sure. Right? Skepticism will just kind of allow this doctrine to flourish in a thought pattern and say, huh, I'm not sure. Let's see if what the consequences may bring. This isn't a mindset I can myself get into, but it's not something I'm against. I'm not against the idea that we can be skeptical about things and play like a trial and error system with them. However, again, I will say I am vehemently against Epicureanism. This idea that pleasure is the only route to happiness, it's insanity, because there are so many people that are living hedonistically in pleasure all day, every day, all across America, and those people are morbidly depressed. Every person I know that is chasing pleasures, they are depressed, they are immoral beings, and they are people that they literally can't even hold a friendship appropriately because they're so out of their own mind, deluded and focused on these pleasures, that they literally cannot associate with people around them and hold a good friendship because they're so ashamed internally of their own behavior. Vehemently against this ideal and this mindset. It's terrible, and it brings horrible things for society as a collective.
And it's possible to see how someone, especially someone that was terribly frustrated with the attempt to obtain final absolute knowledge, might resort to skepticism as a kind of easy way out, a way of avoiding the burden of Socratic inquiry. The third and most important development in Hellenistic philosophy is called Stoicism. And Stoicism is probably the greatest and most interesting achievement of the Hellenistic philosophers. And while it never achieves the poetic and intellectual grandeur of the Socratic synthesis, of the Platonic overarching system which makes statements about the entire human condition, Stoicism is, in fact, a noble philosophy, an excellent philosophy for silver men, for those spirited men in the Republic who are going to be our guardians. It's an excellent philosophy for military men. It's an excellent philosophy for people that are going to be practical politicians if they intend to be virtuous, if they intend to pursue the public good. And
So again, if you have a man of authority who's holding a good place in society, you're going to want him to be a Stoic man. You're going to want him to be somebody who is well-rounded, has a control over their emotions, and is capable of maintaining a discipline away from these negative desires. Because, for example, let's just take a line of thought here. I'm going to give you a perfect example, actually. Let's look at World War II. Okay, Adolf Hitler was a Stoic man. Never drank, never smoked. He was a vegan. He did his best to remain away from all forms of vice, and he looked negatively upon vice. On the opposite end, Franklin D. Roosevelt was an Epicurean man. He was living for pleasure. All he did was living for pleasure. He was an alcoholic. He was a person who was cared deeply about money. He was very ingrained in this materialistic worldview. He was chasing pleasure the entirety of his life, okay? One man was able to take his civilization and uplift it to the highest realms possible, spiritually, physically, financially, all of these things. The other man had his country in a Great Depression and couldn't even keep his people well-fed, right? So you can see that this man, this Epicurean, delusional FDR, sold his country down the drain for private interests, because those private interests were of his own, because he was not a man of virtue and not a Stoic man. He was an Epicurean, okay? And on the other hand, you have Adolf Hitler, who would not have sold his people out for the whole world over, okay, and fought and actually stayed in the epicenter of his homeland until his eventual death, right? That is a Stoic man of virtue, right? That shows you the contrast between one thought pattern and the other, one behavior and the other, and how important that contrast can be for society. It's on an individual scale, this is okay, right? Like, you know, you're a great guy, you do good things. Your neighbor's a shitbag, and he doesn't do good things. Now, already, just by that alone, that can be problematic, right? Again, let's say I'm a disciplined person, and I'll give you a great example. I'm a disciplined person. I have a Puerto Rican family that lives behind me. There is not a Saturday, literally not a Saturday in the spring and summer, where you do not hear all weekend. It's just that constant Spanish music all weekend. It's bumping my fucking house. My house is vibrating throughout the weekend, right? So it's annoying, right? It's hard to like lay around and focus and read when you have that shit going on all day next to you, right? They don't mow their grass. Their grass gets like 4 feet high. And now there's ticks. I have been when I was a child to their home. The doorbell, the doorbell when it lights up, that little doorbell, you know, like a doorbell has a light on it. Ticks are on the doorbell because there's ticks breeding and living in their fucking yard because their yard is 4 feet high of grass. And the ticks are attracted to the light on the doorbell. That's not a way to live, okay? And that's not a way I don't want to live next to that. It's terrible. Let's move forward.
Stoicism is characterized by a rejection of pleasure as the standard of human happiness and human felicity. Stoicism takes the position that the wise man, the good man, the philosopher, is a man who lives in accordance with nature. He fears only abdication.
Sorry, I'm just seeing your comment, Carl. I have two different translations of the Republic. Let me actually check which one mine is. It's the one that's Penguin Classics. Let me look. This is the Penguin Classics version of the Republic. I don't know what translated by Desmond Lee. That's the translator of my version. I like Penguin Classic books. I haven't had one where I thought the translation was poorly done or hard to follow. Again, if you want to learn about Stoicism and how well a Stoic man can run society. Excuse me. The Republic by Plato, one of the best books to get caught up on this. There's other good Stoic thinkers. Cicero wrote some good books. Obviously, Marcus Aurelius. We're going to talk about him in this video today. But yeah, definitely read up on Stoicism. It's for the better of yourself and those around you in connection. Yeah, Ella, it's everywhere. It's their culture, and every song is the same. That's something that drives me insane.
Taking his moral responsibility. He is not afraid of pain. He is not afraid of death. He is not afraid of poverty. He is not afraid of any of the vicissitudes of the human condition. He fears only that he should let himself down and that he should be less than a complete human being. According to the Stoics, and there are a number of Stoics, two or three or four or five, that actually developed the doctrine, but all the doctrines are quite similar. The only matter of concern to a wise and philosophic individual is the things completely under your control. You can't control the movements of the sun and the planets. You can't control whether a leaky ship sinks or makes it to port. You can't control the weather. You can't control other people. You can't control the society around you. There's only one thing and one thing only that you are in control of, and that is you. Your will, your intentions, yourself. In other words, the wise man, the truly philosophical man, is the man who is entirely in control of his own soul, who takes utter and complete moral responsibility for his actions, and is indifferent to everything else, not because he doesn't care about other people, not because he doesn't care about the felicity of the entire human species, but because it's not under his control. There's no use wondering or worrying about what tomorrow will bring, since tomorrow isn't under your control. Do what's right today, and let tomorrow take care of itself.
So again, this isn't to be confused here, and he will say this, but I've had somebody mention to me as a person who is someone who's interested in philosophy, and I think I've had two or three people mention this, that I myself am not a Stoic because I try to fix what's going on with the Jews, right? Rather than being indifferent about it. You have to understand, the Stoic indifference is specifically indifference on things you cannot control, right? So to state that we cannot control what's happening in our society is insanity. We can fix this, right? It's just an application of the will. It's not easy to control. It's a hard thing to control, but it's something we can eventually control. Now, a Stoic wouldn't get upset about it, right? I don't sit on my show or even in my room by myself at night and get blackpilled and cry about the fact that Jews are taking over society and get angry and right? I just look, it is what it is. They're doing what they're doing. Let's stop it. Okay? Let's put out a logical process here. Let's write something out. Let's collectivize against it. Let's create a cohesive community and let's fix it. That's all you can do, right? To get upset about it, to get angry about it, to get confused and flustered and all these things, these are all illogical. None of these make any sense. It's unnatural to do so. You have no control over that, but you can control your reaction to it. You can control your emotions. So keep yourself calm. Understand that this is a process of history. We've seen this many times over. And it's a natural process, right? Naturally, as this Jewish yoke becomes more and more obvious to people, we'll be able to go, okay, look at guys, look at what the Jews are doing here, look what they're doing here, look what they're doing there. And eventually everybody's going to go, okay, these people are a clear threat to our happiness and they're a problem. And then the problem will get solved, right? But the only issue is right now most people don't see it as a problem yet. So when you see it as a problem, you're one of those people that wakes up and goes, oh my gosh, this is a huge problem. Don't get angry about it because that's not going to help you, right? How's that going to help you at all? Don't get sad about it. That's not going to help you. So just get involved, get passionate about it, right? Stoics, passion isn't necessarily an emotion that is bringing you away from reality or nature, right? As long as your passion is driven into things that make sense, right? Again, don't get passionate about deciding that you want to combine Saturn with the sun. Like, that's not going to happen, right? So don't get passionate about something that literally can't happen, but get passionate about things that you know you can change. Like reading a book, right? It's not fun always, but get passionate about it. Get yourself involved and you can do it.
Stoic philosopher is the man who has liberated himself from fear. He's not afraid of death. He's not afraid of pain. He's not afraid of other people's dismissal as a fool. The only thing he cares about is that he should meet his moral obligations. Ralph Waldo Emerson once said that greatness is the perception that virtue is enough, which is an elegant and beautiful line. And he might well have stolen that from one of the Stoics, because all of the Stoics basically believe that. Virtue, moral virtue, an organized soul which pursues rationally the ends which are good for all human beings, that's the Stoic conception of virtue. They finally understand their greatness consists in the fact that they perceive that virtue is enough. We do not need wealth. We do not need sexual gratification. We do not need life itself. If moral virtue tells us that we must die in the pursuit of some good end, the protection of our family, the protection of our home, the protection of the innocent, in the doing of right, nothing should be spared, not even our lives. The Stoic wise man is a man who has trained his soul, trained his mind, so that he is not afraid of apparent evils. He is only afraid of real evil. He is afraid of losing control of his soul. He is afraid of being a slave to lust, to desire, to emotion. The Stoic man is the honorable philosopher, the man who stands at his duty and is steadfast and serious-minded. In living according to nature, what the Stoic philosopher does is examine the nature of the human condition and the nature of the world around us. He discerns his position in nature. He discerns the kind of creature that he is. And he lives in such a way as not to disgrace himself, as not to be less than what he truly could be.
I also want to point out, again, Stoicism preaching so heavily upon things like nature. You'll see, if you read in deeply into National Socialist doctrine, it's almost compounding off of this worldview or this idea, right? It's like furthering your Stoic beliefs or your Stoic values. Again, Hitler, looking at him as an individual, was not a man who chased pleasures. On the contrary, he was a man who avoided pleasures as much as possible, right? And they preached being in accordance with nature, with that natural process. And again, the more you follow nature, you can try to swim uphill from nature, you can try to swim against the current, but nature is as nature does. Nature is never going to change. You can't change it. So all you're doing by changing it is creating more stress on yourself. Well, if you want, like, again, if you want, you're a guy, you want to swim, why would you swim against the nature when you could swim with the nature, go downhill with the nature, and go with the natural current of the stream? That's going to make that swimming a hell of a lot easier, right? Don't go against the process. Ethno-nationalist with a $10 investment. Can we get the Roman in the chat for ethno-nationalist? He just says investment. Thank you very much, brother. Thank you so much. Don't forget, guys. Welcome, Nick, by the way. Don't forget, guys. Ketzer has offered to match all contributions to the show today, all the way up to $500 total. Okay. So, chat on GTV is working now. Oh, great. One second. Let me pull that up on my stream then, because I don't have the chat open anymore since it wasn't working. Sorry if you guys are chatting on GTV. I have not been seeing it. Let me open that up. Okay, GTV chat is now open. Again, don't forget, guys, Ketzer is matching all of the investments on the show today. Entropy and Odyssey investments both will go towards this bar. I'll calculate them and add them up. If we fill this bar today, I will do an extra show tomorrow. I'll do a bonus show right away tomorrow to make up for, not to make up for anything, to make up for the bar, just to show the reappreciation. Okay, let me pull this tab over here. Good. Alrighty. Let's continue.
He won't live the swinish life that we found with Aristophanes. He wants to be, if not...
White Power stream clip, I see you over in the GTV. Looks like the chat is, in fact, working.
Not a god, certainly not less than human. He won't be an animal either. He will live up to the fullest potentials that human being has to offer.
Now... Feeble said, I donated 25 with the support button, but it's not showing up in the chat. Let me check on my end. Sometimes, I know it's the process of how this works. I've had a couple people do that, and it doesn't go through the right way for them. Yes, I do, in fact, see your donation of $25. Also... Druidic did a $5 donation as well. Thank the both of you. I don't know why those aren't coming up in the chat room, but we have an extra 30 towards the goal, so we're a quarter of the way towards the goal. Thank you very kindly to both of you. I don't know why that's not showing up in the chat room. Somebody explained this before, and I can't exactly remember. There's a way when you donate that you're supposed to... it's like a support button on the bottom of the stream or something. I don't know. I don't know exactly how it works on Odyssey. I'm much more brushed up on Entropy. It's something about where you're pressing the support button. I believe that's the problem. But thank you both very much, guys. Can we get the Romans in the chat for Feeble and Druidic? Druidic with a $5 investment and Feeble with a $25. Thank you guys so much. I really do appreciate it. I'm sorry that they did not come up. I see. Holokov as well with the 50 library coins. Can we get the Romans up for Holokov? Thank you, my friend. Nick, I'm gonna try to pronounce this. I don't know if I can pronounce this. Nick with an $11 investment. Can we get the Romans up for Nick as well? Thank you, my friend. Greatly appreciate you. We are at $61 out of 200. Nick said Lavalier. Maybe that's how you say it. Mike for Logos Academy. Yeah, I definitely need a new mic for the Logos Academy series. Absolutely. I've either been using my phone or using my webcam, and if I use my webcam, then I don't have a microphone that's appropriate for it. It's goofy. Here, Nick said in the chat, this is how you fix it. Don't use the support button under the stream. Use the money symbol button under the chat. Below where you type a message. I see. Library coins have very slim monetary value, I believe. I think it's like a fraction of a penny or something like that. Alright, thank you guys again so much for the support. Again, Ketzer will be matching everything at the end of the show. very kind to offer on his behalf to try to get some more support to the stream. Thank you, brother. I really do appreciate you for that.
Now, among the Roman Stoics, two are especially noteworthy. One is Epictetus, and one is Marcus Aurelius. And one of the wonderful ironies about the history of philosophy is that Epictetus was a slave and Marcus Aurelius was an emperor. And philosophy is the great equalizer. Both the slave and the emperor can equally well participate in a philosophy that is accessible to all human beings as human beings. There's nothing less conscious of social status than philosophy. A wise man, a man who is disciplined, in control of his emotions, and follows the way of nature, can be a good man no matter what his position in the social structure is. He is not responsible for the social structure, and it is not his problem. If the gods or nature or whatever is controlling the world makes you a slave, then be a good slave. If God or nature or whatever is controlling the world makes you an emperor, then be a good one. Your job is not to disgrace yourself and live up to the highest potentials of human being. The most interesting of the Stoics is Marcus Aurelius.
Celtic Cross, welcome, brother. I see you over in the GTV. And for those who are not familiar with Marcus Aurelius, obviously, he was a Roman emperor. He was what most would describe as an actual philosopher king, which, again, is a concept that's brought up in Plato's Republic, okay? When they talk about the reason the book is called The Republic is because they go down a list of all of the different forms of society, and they come to the conclusion that the Republic would be the best kind of society possible for humanity, okay? And when they say that the Republic would be the best, they say, well, who would rule this best kind of society? Who would be best fit to rule the best society? And they come to the conclusion that the best fit ruler would be a philosopher king. Again, philosopher, in the etymology of the word, it comes from the prefix philo, meaning lover of or love of, and sopher, which is Sophia, right? Comes from Sophia, which is knowledge or wisdom. Okay, so a philosopher, it literally means a lover of wisdom, lover of knowledge, somebody that is. And when you say this, it's all encompassing. It's not just, oh, I love to have knowledge in math, or I love to have knowledge in science. It's everything. A philosopher is a lover of all knowledge, of all forms of knowledge, whether it's scientific, mathematic, philosophic in itself, whether it's on literature, whether it's on language, on spirituality, on the cosmos, whatever the case may be. A philosopher is a lover of wisdom in all forms.
Lord Acton, the great English philosopher and historian, once said that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that's generally speaking true. The difficulty with that generalization is Marcus Aurelius. Marcus Aurelius was an absolute ruler. He was a ruler of the Roman Empire. He was an emperor. He had absolute power of life and death over everyone in the known world. I don't mean everyone in the world as we know it today, but everyone in the world as the Romans would have known it. They don't know about China or have a very attenuated conception of the Eskimos. For them, the world is the Mediterranean basin, and Rome owns it. And Marcus Aurelius owns Rome, essentially. His word is law. Now, for almost all the Roman emperors, they lived scandalous lives, and they disgraced themselves. They were much more concerned with indulging their sensual appetites, satisfying their passions, flying into rages. Marcus Aurelius is the standing exception to that, and the exception to Lord Acton's generalization. In his case, power didn't corrupt. Absolute power did not corrupt absolutely. Instead, absolute power allowed us to see what the man underneath the body is really like. It allowed us to find out what Marcus Aurelius's soul is like. Imagine a man for whom all the restraints of law and custom and political order are taken away. He can have whatever he wants. If a man under those circumstances behaves well, you know something about the soul underneath, because no external constraint is making him do what he is doing.
And that's a really good point, right? So when you have this absolute power, there's nothing that is holding you back from just chasing your desires, right? So a peasant, they can't just exactly chase their desires, because if your desire is alcohol or drugs or cars, right? You want a Lamborghini, right? You can't just chase that desire all you want. An absolute ruler can. So if an absolute ruler isn't chasing that desire, it shows you that deep inside, this is actually a good man, a great man, right? That's an impressive quality. Celtic, yeah, sounds good. If you want my email, it's just logosrevealed88@gmail.com. Don't forget about that, guys. Just give me some truth. You have been very kind on the Tuesday support with a $50 investment. Says, oh, slash. Can we get the Romans in the chat? Throwing three up. Thank you very much. Greatly appreciate that. Filling up that bar, guys. We're over halfway on that bar. Again, if we fill that bar, we have a double promotion today. If that bar gets filled, I will be doing a bonus show tomorrow. So starting from today, I'll be live every single day this week, if that's the case. And our good friend Ketzer in the chat has offered very generously to match all investments up to a total of $500 on today's stream. So fill that bar up. Ketzer will be doubling it down, and we'll be doing a bonus show tomorrow if we get that filled up. So thank you again, Ketzer, for the offer. And thank you again, Just Give Me Some Truth, for the very kind investment. Thank you, guys. I really do appreciate you keeping the stream going. It means a lot to me.
Marcus Aurelius is the one example of an absolute ruler who behaves himself in such a way as not to disgrace himself. It's an amazing temptation. Imagine what it's like. Stop and put yourself in that place for a second. Marcus Aurelius takes the throne in 161 AD and he dies in 180 AD. 19 years controlling the entire world.
Dark Mice with the one library coin, he asks, what is the lecturer's name? I'm going to give you not only his name, but I'm also going to send you a link to the video so you can find his channel. His name is Michael Sagru. Brilliant man. He has done some of the best philosophical analysis of Western culture that anyone has ever done in history, I think. So there is the link in both of the chat rooms if you guys want to check out more of his work. We've been analyzing these a lot on the podcast streams because it's really helpful to create stimulating intellectual thoughts and kind of piggyback off of them and explain the importance of them, right? So he does his piece, and it's good to go even deeper. But he does a really good kind of general synopsis and analysis of the thoughts of some of these great men in our history.
He can have all the money in the world. That's not an exaggeration. All the money in the world. If he wants it, he can just collect it all. He can have sex with anyone he wants, whenever he wants, under any circumstances. If he wants to get drunk, he can have wine brought in by the boatload. Infinitely, forever. He can go on a drunk now and stay drunk for the next 19 years until he dies. Imagine anything that the bronze, desiring, emotional, irrational parts of your souls want. And now imagine that you can have it. Now, under those circumstances, imagine that you are forced to bear with this human condition for 19 long years. Now ask yourself, and you didn't give a show of hands, but stop and think about it for a minute. How many of you would fail to disgrace yourselves? To tell you the truth, I don't think that I could meet the challenge. If you're honest about it and you stop and think about what kind of a man it takes to bear up under those circumstances, I think you'll have to admit, or at least I'll have to admit, that he's a better man than I am. And that in this respect, over the centuries, Marcus Aurelius serves as a standing reproach to our self-indulgence, a standing reproach to the idea that we are unable to deal with the circumstances of human life. If you can deal with temptation at that level, I cannot imagine what is outside the human potential. And for the Stoics, we must remember that any virtue which is accessible to any human being is in principle accessible to all of us. We all have a rational nature which allows us to control our feelings, control our behavior, control our connection to other people. Compared to Marcus Aurelius, we have tiny little temptations. We're tempted to steal a little thing. We're tempted to cheat on our income taxes. We're tempted to cheat on our spouses. Marcus Aurelius has that sort of temptation magnified 1,000-fold. And he consistently does good stuff. Stop and think about this for a minute. This is no common man. This is not like the rest of us. And I don't know how he did it. Maybe he did it through philosophy, but, well, it remains to be seen. Marcus is the last of the good emperors. He's the last of the Antonine emperors. And the emperors that come before him are, generally speaking, okay. They're not as bad as the ones that come after. But Marcus is perhaps the greatest of the Romans, the noblest of the Romans. When old-fashioned writers talk about Roman virtue, what they have in mind is Marcus Aurelius, a man who does what he ought to do regardless of circumstance.
Now, again, I want to hone in on this key word, noble. He calls him the noblest of them, right? So in essence, when we look at the term Arian, Arian means noble. So he's the most Arian of the Roman emperors is what he is saying in essence. It's a very important line of thought to draw when we talk about, we're looking at the Third Reich, the usage of the term Arian and why that term was being used. People sometimes fail to recognize the importance of that word. It doesn't just mean anybody, you know, we have movements today and it's, oh, white power. Well, does that mean power to the junkie in the trailer park? What does white power mean, right? We have to insinuate something higher than that, because I don't believe in power to people that don't deserve that power, no matter what the race may be. Because if trailer trash junkie white guys were running society, it wouldn't be any better than it is today. It would be just as easily subverted as it is today, right? I mean, actually, let's look at our government. Our government has white power, right? We look at Joe Biden and Trump. I mean, these guys are white guys, but they're fucking sleaze bags. So it doesn't really matter that they're white. We need Aryan power. We need noble power. We need real men in power, stoic men, right? Hitler, it wasn't white power. It was Aryan power. He was a noble white man. This is why we revere that. This is why we look up towards that, because that's something to actually strive for and want to be like, right? I don't want to be like Joe Biden. I don't want to be like Trump, right? I don't think anybody does, okay? Realistically, unless they're maybe not, they don't have an appropriate moral compass, then possibly that is the case. I see George Telemann. Thank you very much for your comment. Yeah, Tuesdays are typically philosophy type of streams. We do things like this quite often. Book of Daniel, certainly agree, certainly do. Yes, Nick, yes, absolutely, absolutely. Thank you, my friend. Okay, we're going to actually take just a brief 3-minute little intermission. I'm going to throw you guys some music. I have to use the restroom. We're at that halfway point on the stream, guys. We are 1 hour into the 2-hour show, and we're about halfway full on that bar. Don't forget, guys, if we do fill that bar tonight, we're going to be doing a bonus show tomorrow. And I'll tell you what, I'll let the top investor of the show determine what that show will be tomorrow. Actually, I guess the fair thing to do would be to do Ketzer, because, again, Ketzer is matching all contributions up to $500, okay? So if we fill that bar up, Ketzer will be matching everything, and we'll do a bonus show tomorrow. Ketzer's choice is what he wants. Let me throw you guys some classical music. We are at the halfway point on the show. Yep, halfway. It flies fast when you're talking philosophy, that's for sure. Let me get this music going. Alrighty, guys, we'll be back in just a couple minutes. Stay with us. Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Finished up with the halftime intermission. Took myself a little bathroom break. Welcome back, everybody, to the second half of the show. Again, we are live on GTV, Odyssey, and Speak Free Radio. If you guys want to listen in the podcast format, go on over to Speak Free Radio. Check me out. There's also a lot of other good creators on there spreading very similar messages. People talking about history, false flags, talking about the Jewish problem. I don't know if anybody else talks about philosophy at all or culture or things like that. It's actually a thing I very rarely hear discussed in almost any circles, so I'm not sure. I can't say for certain if anyone else touches on that. But if you are interested in that, here is the place to be. Pretty much every Tuesday we've been doing philosophical endeavors and talking about where things go, where we want things to go, how we want things to go. All of these things are analyzed in depth in these shows. Again, if you guys do want to chat, you guys want to actually participate in some of the discussion, hop over onto Odyssey or GTV. It looks as if we have the GTV chat back up and running. Again, Odyssey, it's or GTV. Odyssey is spelled O-D-Y-S-E-E. And my account on both of those platforms is Logos Revealed. We also are on Gab and Twitter, at Logos Revealed, except for Twitter, there is an I at the end of my name. It's at Logos Revealed I. Definitely recommend that you guys follow me on Twitter. Actually, while we're on this brief little welcome back from the halftime, I am going to post my Twitter into the chat room. I would really appreciate if you guys would follow my Twitter and go ahead and share my work over there. I've been sharing a lot of clips. I've been sharing some fundamental facts on Twitter. The Twitter has been growing quite a bit, and that's the place we want to grow because that's where we want to get the message across, right? Message doesn't mean too much in the echo chambers. Twitter is more out in the open, so the message can actually reach new people. So go ahead and share my work over there. That's one of the best ways that you can support my work. And obviously the other way that you can support my work is to financially support. We have links down in the description to do that. Yet again, as always, hate promoting this. It's Jewish. It's just I feel like I'm going like this as I'm promoting, right? Jokes aside, if we fill this bar up today, we will be doing a bonus show tomorrow. And again, just one more friendly reminder, Ketzer in the chat room is matching all contributions to the show today, 100% matching, all the way up to $500. So a very kind gesture by him. Make sure to take advantage of that gesture today over any day would be the best day to do so. So to add my piece to it, to incentivize, again, if we do fill this bar up, I will certainly go live tomorrow with a bonus show to show my appreciation as well. All right, let's continue, folks.
Tough Roman virtue. He's not afraid of being dead. He's not afraid of...
Mariner, my friend with the $5 investment, says, hail to Ketzer. Thank you very much. Can we get the Romans up in the chat for both Mariner and Ketzer, guys? Both two wonderful gentlemen who also both participate in the book club. Don't forget to join the book club, folks. Join the book club. Get yourself educated, right? Get educated. We're reading really good books. Actually, today or yesterday is the mark of this month, and we're starting a new book, which is The Agricola and Germania by Tacitus. Sorry. It's a very good book. He talks about the Aryan origins in Europe. Definitely something that you want to read up on, especially with the last point we made right before halftime.
Being in pain. He's not afraid of having people laugh at him. He's only afraid of doing what's wrong. He's only afraid of making chaos of his soul. Why? Because his soul is the only thing he's completely in control of. It's the only thing...
Oh, Holokov, very generous, brother, with a $25 investment. Can we get the Romans up for Holokov as well? He says, /to Logos Revealed and Ketzer. Let's get those Romans up, guys. Come on, throw them up for both Ketzer and Holokov. Thank you, guys. I really do appreciate it. We're very close to filling up that bar. We're about 80 away. Thank you, guys. Thank you very much, Holokov. Yeah, Ketzer, it'll be completely up to you. If we fill that bar, Ketzer will get to choose what kind of a show he would like, since he's going to be matching the contributions. I'm always on board for a philosophy. I could try a monkey. I'm not huge on it, but I can definitely try it. Whatever you will, I will do.
He's responsible for, and the rest of it is a matter of indifference to him. He'll certainly try and perform his function as emperor in the best way he possibly can. But There are Germans at the border, and should they succeed in winning this war, he did the best he could. He has no reason to feel guilty. He has no reason to feel that this is a difficulty. If, for some reason, he gets sick, well, sickness is part of human life. You accept it as it is, you deal with it the best you can, and then you move on. In other words, Marcus Aurelius intends to live a life in which he will not have to feel guilty about anything. And he succeeded in doing that under the most trying possible circumstances. Again, put yourself in a position where you can have anything you want and no one can stop you. No matter how evil, no matter how depraved, no one can stop you because your word is law. Marcus Aurelius behaved himself for 19 years under those circumstances. It's a standing reproach to our self-indulgence. The kind of things that Marcus Aurelius writes are not meant for publication. Let's think about this a little further. Marcus wrote this manuscript without intending to have it published. After his death, he wanted to have it burned. Some philosophically inclined, I guess, bookkeeper, librarian, aide-de-camp, or whoever it is that picked this up, said, no, we just can't throw this out. We cannot lose the memory of such a great man, and we can't lose the sort of meditations that he created. He wrote a book called The Meditations, and it's a book to himself that's not intended to be published.
And that's something I want to point out as well. When we're reading a book like Meditations, I don't know if I have my copy with me. Let me just briefly look on the floor here. I think I might have the copy with me. Yep, we certainly do. By the way, Mythic, thank you very much for sharing the stream. It's a lovely thing that you guys can do to help spread my work. I greatly appreciate that. Share my stream, the clips, throw them all up there, especially on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it. Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. Very, very slim book, as you can see. Very, very small one. Great read, again. Teaches you a lot of these Stoic principles. But as he's saying here, this book wasn't actually written for others. So when you read this, it's very much like you're reading a man's personal journal. You're getting his insights and his thoughts on life from his experiences and what he learned. And that kind of makes this a little more authentic. And by authentic, I mean it's true inner thoughts. So when you're writing, let's say I was to write Meditations, a philosophy for other people around me, and I want them to read it. Well, I know it's going to be viewed by an audience, so I tailor the work to make it a little more entertaining or a little more open, right? When if it's just written by yourself for yourself, it's a private document. There's more authenticity to it. Nothing is being tailored for an audience, which makes it all the more better. So, again, I definitely do recommend this book. There's actually a lot of people that have read this book. It's one that is a little more highly respected in the mainstream. You can find it on like YouTube. You can look up analyses of it. You can look up summaries, reviews, things like that. And you can find this book really cheap, like almost anywhere. This is one of the few books you can go out to a store and actually physically buy. Most of the literature we talk about on this show is very esoteric, and you can't just go to your local Barnes & Nobles or Walmart or something and buy it. So definitely do recommend this book. Again, very authentic document. You're really reading a man's personal journal as to what he has learned makes the greatest man of all time. And he is revered as one of the greatest of all time. So definitely make sure you give this a read if you get some time. Payne Vriller, welcome, my friend. I think this is the first time I've seen you chatting. Welcome, my friend. I do appreciate you coming in.
It's sort of a man writes a book to himself. What sense does that make? Think about it. The nature of a book is communicating something, and we would think we would communicate it to some reader. But this is not going to be published. It's written to himself. What makes a man write a book to himself? And there's a very deep answer, I think, here. Marcus Aurelius writes a book to himself because he's the loneliest man in the world. He has no friends because he has no equals. Think about a man breaking himself on the rock of an impossible virtue. He has no equals. Everyone he talks to wants something from him. He is the emperor of everything in the world. He owns it all. Everything he says immediately gets done. He has absolute life and death power over everyone. So anytime he's in the throne room, He's having an audience. Someone comes in from some part of the empire. They're always here for some reason, and they're always here because they want something from him. And all Marcus wants to do is live a philosophical life. But he happens to have had the misfortune to be born the Emperor of Rome. What a pity. So he has to deal with these self-centered, swinish people all the time, and it's his responsibility to do good for them, to give them justice, to give them both examples of virtue and virtuous laws and virtuous decisions. And the weariness of it gets to him after a while. The book that he's written, The Meditations, is shot through with a kind of philosophical melancholy that is extremely moving, despite the stoic content of what he's saying. In other words, oddly enough, there are very few books in the world which generate more pathos, which create more of a sense of pity for a person reading this, than this book. He's writing a book to himself because he has no one else to talk to. And what kind of things does he write in the book? Moral maxims. I mean, he has two or three ideas. It's about 100-odd pages, but he says essentially the same thing again and again and again. Why? He has nobody to talk to, so that limits the scope of his conversations. And he's constantly trying to remind himself that, look, although the people you're dealing with are corrupt, evil, and depraved, it's your job not to get angry with them, but to try and teach them and morally improve them. If you can't morally improve them, at least...
Now, again, this is the sign of a good man, and it's a hard thing to do, right? This is why we view this in a lot of our great figures in history, Christ, Hitler, Marcus Aurelius, when Nietzsche writes about Thus Spoke Zarathustra, all of these people are men who are good-centered men with virtue in themselves, and want to teach that virtue to others, even if those others hate them for it, even if those others are morally corrupt, morally bankrupt, hideous souls, they still want to preach to those people and help them as best they can. That's a sign of a great man. It's something that not many have the capability of doing, right? Not many people can look at, some communist Antifa faggot and try to pull them out of their worldview and help them, because they're lost. These people are lost. They don't understand what they think is correct. They're simply lost in their own mind. And it's very important that we pull those people out of that delusion, out of that psychopathy that they're stuck within. That's the only way that we can better things, right? So it's a sign of a really strong man to be able to remain calm around that hostile environment and be able to help those hostile figures, even though they remain that hostility.
At least put up with them, because the gods have created us social animals. And it is part of the mark, or it is the mark of a philosophical man, that he should return benefits for harm, because those that would harm other people do not live the philosophical life. Those that don't want the ultimate good for themselves and for society do so because they don't know any better. Marcus has not only political power, but wisdom, and in that respect, he's the only example in the Western tradition of any ruler who even remotely approximates Plato's philosopher king. And he has some of the qualities that Plato thought the philosopher king would have. He is totally disdainful of wealth. Why? He owns everything. What would it be like to own everything from England to Egypt? Well, the idea of accumulating more stuff becomes less and less interesting if you stop and think about it. And if you can have sex with, say, a million people, the million at first has very limited attraction. And at that point, he stops to think and he says, I will do my best to constantly do what I ought to do. And there is a sort of whistling in the graveyard tone to this book. He is, in some respects, an enormously lonely man, and in some respects, an enormously sad man. There's a melancholy in this that's terrifically moving. And yet, we ought not to pity Marcus Aurelius, because if he looked at our lives, he would pity us. Pathetic creatures that we are, we don't even meet his standard of virtue, and we're pitying him. Think about the irony of that. He said, well, I'd pity you back if I didn't think that was disrespectful. Think about what it takes to be something like Marcus Aurelius. We shall not see his like again. In the book itself, he has all kinds of intriguing and caustic, if you will, moral maxims. He says things like this: soon you will have forgotten all things, and soon all things will have forgotten you. In other words, don't get overwrought. You're angry with this guy just because he didn't do what he was supposed to do. Ask yourself how many of the people that are working for you are doing what they're supposed to do. Soon, you'll have forgotten all this because you'll be dead. And soon, all the people who know you, they're going to be dead too, and they'll have forgotten you. And so what's the point of being mean to people? Now imagine the kind of philosophical self-restraint we're talking about here. This is a guy who can chop everyone's head off if he gets sufficiently angry, so he never does. Remarkable, remarkable. So Marcus...
It certainly is, and one other thing I want to point out, almost on a, as a contrary to that maxim, no one has forgotten Marcus Aurelius. Well, some have, right? But Marcus Aurelius, 2,000 years later, is still revered as a great man. So this also shows that the better you are in life... So we talk about... let's talk about maybe the Christian worldview of doing good in this lifetime brings you into heaven, right? If you act moral, if you act just, if you act correctly, you go to heaven, right? Then, in other views, you go to Valhalla or whatever. No matter what the worldview is, if you act good in life, you go to heaven. Well, let's take the spiritual aspect out of it. Let's take the religious aspect out of it. Let's just look at this on a purely logical, in this world plane, right? The greater man you are, the greater you do for society as a collective, that is you now living in the afterlife, right? If you want to, if we could take the superstition out, right? We don't know if there's a heaven and if you're actually going to have an afterlife, right? After this physical one. But what you do know is what you do here, everything you do here that is good for society, that is well-rounded, that is beneficial to people, will be revered for all time. And the longer it's revered, the longer you live after your life. You live on in spirit, right? For example, Jesus Christ might be dead, right? The guy is physically not here. He's physically dead. However, he lives on in the spirit, in the minds of people, in the hearts of people. The spirit still lives, right? Adolf Hitler, for example, that spirit still lives. Actually, I would argue that spirit is now arising, right? That's a spirit that's been disregarded for much time because of the lies that have been spun about it. However, when those lies break down, in another 2,000 years, people will be referring to Adolf Hitler as the second philosopher king, the one who came after Aurelius, the one who did even better than Aurelius in time. But it's just a matter of people understanding the truth about these figures, right? Unfortunately, no one has tried to lie about Aurelius in the past. But unfortunately, when it comes to Adolf Hitler, people have lied greatly about him. And because those direct people are not stoic men, these plutocrats and Jews who are controlling these financial systems, they are not men of stoic values. They are men of Epicurean values who desire pleasure, who desire self-rule and want a tyranny to be able to rule over top of people with an iron fist. And those people can't have you understanding that stoic man's worldview, because if you understand his worldview, you won't respect them and allow them to rule over you any longer. Ryan Urban, welcome, guys. Urban, haven't seen you in a while. Hope you're well. Hope you had a good Easter and you're having a good start to your month so far. I would as well, Katzer. I would as well. I think maybe in his private life, I like to think he probably did quite a bit. But because you'll notice he doesn't often bring him up and try to do that in a negative light like the common society typically tries to do. So there is a chance. I don't want to say definite, but there is a chance. Thank you again, guys. All right, let's continue forward. I do appreciate you, Urban, for promoting in the chat there. Don't forget, folks, if we fill that bar at the bottom of the screen today, we're counting Odyssey as well. We have about 90 on Odyssey, so we're at like 140 out of 2 on the bar. So if we fill that bar today, we're going to do a bonus stream tomorrow. Okay, we will go live tomorrow as well. And Ketzer in the chat room is matching all contributions all the way up to $500. Don't forget about that.
Marcus Aurelius is a man who constantly, in his book, is writing short 1- and 2-line epigrams that essentially say things like, "Don't lose your temper with these people, Marcus. You know how they are. Marcus, it's not your fault that they're stupid. You tried to teach them, and you can keep on trying to teach them. But if Socrates was a good man and they killed him, what do you expect them to do to you?" On the other hand, Marcus Aurelius is willing to rule the Roman Empire for the same reason that the Platonic philosopher king is. If he gives up, somebody worse is going to take the job, and you know what happens then, right? He'd much rather just go home and read his books. He doesn't want to listen to this stuff. But he says, well, the gods put me here. I didn't ask for this job, but I can't very well give it up. I'd be abdicating my responsibility to other people. Imagine the bad laws and bad emperors were going to get after me. Well, should I give the job up now or stand here until the gods are good enough to relieve me of my post? In fact, that's the metaphor he uses all the time. The gods have put you on guard over the Roman Empire. Everyone else is sleeping. Stay where you are and stay awake. Elsewise, God knows what's going to happen. Marcus Aurelius is constantly whistling his way through the graveyard, trying to tell him that this is a very happy life, that he loves being a philosopher, and he particularly loves the particular portion of reality the gods have assigned to him. Now, I think that everyone believes this except the people that read this book, which perhaps is why it wasn't supposed to be published, because when you look at this, you see a terrifically lonely man, a man of immense moral heroism, who has no shoulder to cry on, who disdains crying because what's the point of crying? We must.
Crystal, with a very kind investment of $25. Guys, can we get the Romans in the chat for Crystal? She says, great job, Zach. Thanks, Ketzer. Let's get the Romans up for both Crystal and Ketzer, guys. Thank you so much. Is that book club, Crystal? I hope to see you participate in this month. We didn't get to see you this month in the chat or with your report. I hope you're doing all right. I hope everything's okay. Look forward to hopefully seeing you for this month with the next book, if that's you. I don't know if it's the same person. I don't want to assume. Urban said, doing good. I'm pumped for the roundtable on Saturday. Yeah, it's going to be it is a very interesting mix of guests. I'm glad you think the same. I'm really excited for that mix of guests. Again, guys, we are doing a roundtable on Saturday talking about remoralization. We're going to have Alfred Schaefer, Nick from Night Nation Review, Andreas Johansson from the Nordic Frontier, and Fasci Bookshelf. We're going to have all of them on the show for a lovely roundtable, which, Nick, if you're still in the chat, I need to talk to you tonight about the program that you use when you invite me onto your show, like the thing I log into, that program. I need you to talk to me about that because Fasci can't get StreamYard to work on his end, so I want to try the other platform if possible. Courtesy, no, I have not. That's okay. That's okay, Crystal. Thank you again for the support, and I completely understand. You know, it happens. Just do me a favor. Don't be a stranger, right? If you can't make it for the month, don't feel ashamed of it. Just pop in the chat and let us know so we don't feel like you're gone or something's wrong, you know. Just want to make sure you're good, and hopefully again we can see you this month. I'm really looking forward to getting your book report and your take as well. All right, let's continue forward, guys.
Live in accordance with nature. Now here's the natural condition of human beings: they get born, all kinds of stuff happens to them, and they die. Marcus's maxims with reference to that are: A, stop complaining. There's nothing to complain about because there's only two kinds of things. There are the kinds of things you can control, and there are the kinds of things you can't. If you can't control it, complaining about it is stupid and a waste of time, and I don't want to hear any more about it because you can't control it, so what's the point of talking about this? Or you have the other kind of thing, the kind of thing you can control, like your intentions, like your behavior, like your actions. And since you can control them, who do you expect to help you out except yourself? Stop complaining about that too. So whether it's the kind of thing you can control or it's the kind of thing you can't control, Marcus Aurelius does not want to hear any complaints, and he does not want to hear any excuses because there are no excuses to give. Whew. Now, that's easy enough to say. And a lot
get
of people think that other
show
people
ready
should be this way. Right? Have you noticed it? Like, you can't help but admire this guy. Like,
just give me some truth. Far too kind with another $50 investment. Guys, can we get the Romans up for Just Give Me Some Truth? Says, get the bonus show ready. Thank you so much. So kind of you. We will certainly be doing a bonus show tomorrow. So, Ketzer, get the thinking cap on. You're going to be deciding what the show will be tomorrow. We'll go live. We'll do a 4 o'clock show tomorrow. Okay? We'll do a 4 o'clock show. Romans up, guys. Bar is full. We will definitely... definitely be doing a bonus show tomorrow, 4 o'clock Eastern, okay? And Ketzer will get to pick the show. Thank you guys again so much for the support. And any support further for the rest of the night, again, Ketzer will be matching all the way up to $500 total. So you guys can still contribute. Now is the best time to do it because Ketzer is running this, again, very, very generous promotion. So, again, Roman's up for Just Give Me Some Truth and for Ketzer above all. Bowhunter as well, 88. like the number, with a $25 investment. Says /logos, /chat. Thank you, Bo Hunter, so much as well. Really do appreciate all of the support, guys. Throw the Romans up for Bo Hunter and for Ketzer, guys. Okay. All right, let's continue here. Thank you guys so much again. I really do appreciate it. I got a shopping cart full of books that I'm interested to pick up very shortly, and I'll be bringing a lot more philosophy to you guys once I read these books up. I've been reading like a hound this last 2 weeks, so I got a lot of new points that are going to be brought to the forefront and discussed once I finish up. I have two or three more books that I want to finish before starting to discuss a little bit further. But I'm very close. So thank you guys again really kindly for the support and helping me further this knowledge and further bringing this knowledge to more people. It's something that I'm deeply passionate about and greatly appreciate from the bottom of my soul, truly. All right, let's continue forward here, guys.
Every one of us, I bet, in this audience, I thought, wow, what a great guy. I wish I knew him personally. No, you don't. Think of what he'd think of you. You really don't want to know this guy. Imagine working for him. Oh, please. No, this guy is never going to be satisfied. And if he is satisfied, he's not like he's going to give you applause. He's going to say, well, you're doing what you ought to do. No compliments for you. You're doing what you ought to do. You don't need any reward beyond that. You're living like a philosophical man, which is a reward in itself. Virtue is its own reward. You're virtuous. What do you want from me? Get back to work. And of course, if you're not virtuous, you are pretty much what he expects human beings to be, you swine. And what's unnerving about this is that there's not the slightest taint of hypocrisy in it. He not only says this stuff, he acts this stuff. He not only talks the talk, he walks the walk. He does it. And he does it under worse, more difficult circumstances than you. Fail to do it. And yet he still likes us. In other words, he still go out of his way to help us out. If he were the judge in a court of law, he would still give us justice, even though we have done nothing to deserve it. As a matter of fact, what's the line from Hamlet? If we gave every man his deserts, who would escape a whipping? Marcus Aurelius would. That's part of the problem with Marcus Aurelius. There's nothing quite like this guy in the whole history of the world. Marcus Aurelius says things in his book like, human beings are social animals. Either teach them or put up with them. The kind of thing that a man has to remind himself of, I imagine. Or Marcus says...
That's a really good line. Human beings are social animals. Teach them or put up with them, right? And, well, let's look at society today, right? We're not teaching our people anymore. Who's teaching them? Where are they getting their education from? Universities. These universities have been indoctrinated with Marxist theory and Jewish ideals, right? So, sure, we can try to put up with these Antifa, social justice warrior, liberal types. I don't want to put up with them. I don't think you guys want to put up with them. So teach them. Teach them, because if they don't learn from us, they're learning from the Jew. And if they're learning from the Jew, well, you see the product of that, right? We must re-educate our people. Again, I want to point something really important out, and especially to those that say, oh, you know, fuck the boomers. The boomers put us in this situation. It's all their fault. People that want to blame those people for not understanding what's going on. Understand this. Their media, for all of their lives, was entirely Jewish-owned and Jewish-controlled. They had no way to see these things. So all they learned was Jewish perspective. So instead of putting up with what they're saying, right, and dealing with this nonsense that's being spewed, teach them. Teach them otherwise. Help them, right? Hitler didn't say to the German people that had sold him out with the Treaty of Versailles, oh, fuck those Germans. I hate them. We want different Germans that aren't like them. No, he said, you know, I love my German people, even through their mistakes. It's unfortunate that they did this, but I love my German people and I want to uplift them. Even if they've been wrong and they've done wrong, I want to uplift them so they no longer do that wrong, because I don't want to put up with this wrong anymore, right? So we have to love our people. That's a really big key here. As hard as that might be for some of these circumstances where you try to talk to family and they don't care at all, they're delusional, it's hard. It's very difficult. But we have to love them. That's how we gain that sentiment of them. And it shows that we're genuine in our principles and what we're trying to bring across. When we come across as if we hate them or despise them for what they've done, they're never going to want to follow us. They're never going to want to listen to what we have to say. So we have to push that love for our people very heavily. That's what the Jew does. They push a love for their own, right? A Jew gets attacked in fucking bumfuck Oklahoma in the middle of nowhere, and you got Jews in Germany raving about it, right? So we have to learn that as well.
It's in another passage. Are you weary of enduring the bad men of the world? The gods aren't, and they made them. Are you really weary of enduring the bad men of the world, especially given that you're one of them? Dreadful, powerful, caustic, ruthless analysis of himself and others. He pulls no punches. He is an honest man, and how many honest politicians are there in the world? I mean, it's been some time since we had one leave us literary remains, and here we certainly do have one. The Stoics put together an important and I think worthwhile idea, particularly in this day of international politics, and that's the idea of a cosmopolitan political philosophy. There's few people as cosmopolitan, as lacking in provincial qualities as Marcus Aurelius. The Stoic wise man has made his life consistent with nature, and nature is universal and everywhere. It exists in every place, in every time. So the Stoic man is never any place but home. His polis is the cosmos. That is what makes him cosmopolitan. In ancient Greek political theory, you were a citizen of one political polis, of one particular polis, one particular city-state. You were an Athenian or you were a Spartan. The Stoic wise man is cosmopolitan. Wherever he is, he lives in accordance with nature. Whatever he does what he knows to be right. What difference does it make whether he's in a jail cell or in a palace? As Marcus Aurelius put it in a beautiful epigram in the book, even in a palace it is possible to live well. No excuses. Don't tell me that it's because of temptation. That won't go over. No excuses go with Marcus. The idea of a cosmopolitan political philosophy is one of the great achievements of Roman Stoicism. And if you stop and think about it, it's an excellent and a necessary idea when you're running something as big and heterogeneous as the Roman Empire. This tremendously complicated mix of religions and cultures and peoples and all kinds of heterogeneous ideas means that this is going to be a big patchwork, a big quilt. It's not going to be one culturally unified area. But Marcus would be just as happy being a slave as he is being an emperor. He would just as be happy being a Gaul or an Egyptian as a Roman. As long as there is a nature there and there is a human spirit which can be made in accordance with nature, any of the external facts of life don't matter. And now for the first time we can perhaps see why the Roman Stoics have a reputation, to some extent deserved, of being kind of harsh, cold, unfeeling men. Because there's nothing to worry about. And it's hard for them to sympathize with the fact that other people are worried about things that they regard as trivial or not worth worrying about at all. Many of us worry about sickness. Well, Marcus Aurelius will point out that all people get sick. And once you get sick, since you're a rational human being, you want to go to the doctor, do what he prescribes, and fix your body. There's no point in complaining any place along the line because you know what you're supposed to do. Go do it. Stop asking for somebody else to help you. If you don't help yourself, how can you expect anybody else to help you? Which is a fair criticism. It would be much less persuasive and much less impressive if this were a sort of hypocritical philosophy where Marcus Aurelius indulged himself and told everyone else to be stoical. What really makes this spring to life, what makes this persuasive and moving and important, is that he lives the life. So he doesn't complain when he gets sick. He doesn't complain when he meets military reverses. He doesn't complain about anything. Who would we complain to? The buck does stop with Marcus Aurelius. If you think of the chain of command in the Roman Empire, he doesn't get to complain to anyone else. Everyone complains to him, and he's constantly listening to complaints and difficulties and problems. And he's watching people become unglued, and they're watching them get all upset, and watching them be greedy and avaricious and swinish and lustful and all the things he's not. So he is rather harsh in his criticism, and I think that that's a fair observation about him. But he's not hypocritical, and he's not unfair. And that's one of the cosmopolitan, universal elements in this political philosophy and in this moral philosophy. Because the moral and political philosophy for Marcus Aurelius are going to be connected. In the same way that in Plato's Republic, politics was ethics writ large, and what was good for the individual soul, the gold, silver, and bronze, that ordering of the soul between reason, spirit, and desire, What's good for the soul is the same thing that's good for the city. To have rational people running the government, like Marcus Aurelius, doing their best to follow the philosophical life, you'll want bravery and fortitude and courage among your soldiers, the silver virtues, and among the rest of the people, you expect the bronze virtues. They want to eat and drink and make merry. It would be nice if we could make philosophers all of them, but if we can't, well, the best thing we can do is to take care of them and prevent misfortunes from befalling them, in some respects to try and save them from themselves.
That's very, very well said. Save them from themselves. Again, this old Christian line of forgive them for they know not what they do, right? They don't, right? Most of society, it doesn't. We see this in the modern age. Most of these people, they don't know what they're doing wrong. They're just doing it wrong, right? They're fallen to vice. They're fallen to these pleasurable sensations, and they don't know what they're doing wrong. So we can help them. We can try to uplift them. We can try to make things, put things in place that will ensure that they don't continue to do wrong or at least harm others with their wrong. Or we can just ignore it all and just kind of watch as it all collapses, right? But something's going to have to come after that. And once that something comes, give it a little bit of time and there's going to be people that are doing wrong again. And then the same process is going to run itself out, right? It's just like it's a rotating wheel. So this is just humanity. We have to understand there's always going to be that group of people, that mass that just doesn't know how to guide themselves, right? So it's our duty to try to guide them. When we have that knowledge, when we have that understanding above them, we lift them up with us. They're our brothers, right? They're in the hole. We have to lift them out of that hole. We don't want to leave them for dead. I also want to touch on one other piece. Talking about these desires, right? These pleasure. So the idea that Stoic philosophy preaches against all pleasures. What people have to understand is so some might say, I'm not allowed to have any kind of enjoyment in life. That's how a lot of people respond to that, especially in the modern age. It's not that you're not allowed to have enjoyment in life. It's that you want to be rid of sensational pleasures, okay? Because these pleasures are false pleasures. For instance, anything that kind of gives you that dopamine rush, right? Again, smoking a joint or playing some video games or watching a movie or drinking alcohol. These things are momentary pleasures. The second it's over, you want it again. That urge is going to come back for it. Sex, even to an extent. So when you're having these pleasures, a Stoic doesn't want to have sensational pleasures. They want their pleasures to be true inner joys. Again, for instance, something like having a child, something like building a family, building a good society. These are things that are bring real inner joy, building a nice community in the neighborhood, right? These are all things that bring you pleasure, but no pain is a result of this pleasure. And this pleasure doesn't urge itself back onto you as a habit, right? So when you go out, let's say, for instance, you're in a homogenous white neighborhood in Philadelphia like 90 years ago, right? Back when you're in that situation, you might be able to throw a community block party, right? And get all the neighbors to bring all their kids out and throw a barbecue in the middle of the street and close the streets down and just have a nice block party with all the people around you. And that gives you pleasure, right? Inner pleasure and joy. And that's a good event. But when you're done with that, it's not like the next day you're like, oh God, you're itching at your neck. I gotta have that again, man. I feel shitty without it, right? It's not like that. It's you certainly there is an urge to do that again, absolutely inside you. But it's not a negative urge that pains you. It's a positive urge that says, man, that was something so great. I should do that again, right? That it's not like heroin where you go do heroin, you're like, oh yeah, that's so great. And then the second you're off the heroin, you're like, oh man. Oh, I gotta get that needle in my arm again, right? I'm in a lot of pain. I need that again, right? Now this desire is paining you. It's hindering you. So you were best to never have done it, right? So it tells you it's a false pleasure. If that pleasure is something that you will feel you need to require again, it's a pleasure that should be abstained from, because otherwise you're going to go down this cycle, right? It's a void of chasing that dopamine rush, of chasing that desire. And when you realize that there's no end to that, right? So then we get into the definition of insanity, which is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different outcome, right? That's what this is. You're consistently doing this pleasure, and thinking, oh, okay, I'll feel good. But you're not thinking that afterwards. Well, I'm gonna feel like I need that again. I'm gonna go down that same cycle, right? So you can do things that are actual, bring you pleasure and joy. But those things, think about it before you do it. Will this pleasure be something I'm going to feel the urge to need again habitually? And if it is, it's something I should not do. That's the Stoic mindset. It doesn't say that you're supposed to eliminate all pleasure out of your life and be like a miserable Ebenezer Scrooge in a cage, right? Or in a cave. It's not what it's stating. It's stating that you have to remove these false pleasures, these sensational pleasures that are momentary and fleeting, because that fleeting is what brings you distress. It's a disharmony of the soul to an extent. Scooting, thank you. I greatly appreciate that. Thank you as well, Daniel. Let's continue. We've got about 15 minutes left on the show, guys. Well, about 10 minutes left, because when we hit that ending point, we're going to kind of throw a little bit of outro music on and just let everybody filter out. We've got about 10 minutes left on the show. We'll continue here, and we'll listen to what Michael has to say.
Now, Marcus Aurelius is the only example of this in Roman culture. There's not a great deal of things that we can compare him to. If we had to say that there was someone to compare him to, it would be Epictetus, the slave. And Epictetus and Marcus Aurelius could meet at a level of equality, even though the social distinctions between them are enormous and grave. The reason why they would meet at a level of equality, because they could share mutual respect, because they both understand that to have an orderly soul is the key thing in human life. And that's what makes life worth living. And whether you happen to be a slave or an emperor doesn't make any difference. Whether you happen to be sick or healthy doesn't make any difference. Whether you happen to be just born and have 100 years ahead of you, or whether you're on your deathbed, doesn't make any difference. Marcus says, with regard to death, because many people are afraid of death, and he has no understanding. He doesn't really understand what everybody else's problem is. He says, look, everyone dies, so you're going to die. So what's the point of complaining about it? I can understand trying to avoid it. I mean, health is a good thing, but when you're going to die, you're going to die. Don't give in to fear. Don't give in to irrational musings. Don't let your imagination run wild. Control your feelings. Control your emotions. Control that part of you which is you. The meat, your body, not so important. The other stuff around you in the world, a matter of indifference to you. As long as you follow the way of nature, as long as you act in a rational fashion, as long as you live up to the best potentials in the human soul, then you are a good man and you need worry about nothing else. Some people worry about the gods, that the gods will cause you misfortunes, that the gods have a Hades or a hell or an afterlife where people will be tortured and have bad things done to them. Marcus adopts exactly the same position that Socrates did. He says, look, Marcus says, I'm not certain if there are gods. In the book itself, he says, I'm not aware of any rational proof that there exist gods, and I'm not aware of any rational proof that there are no gods. In other words, he's agnostic in that respect. But he takes a position rather like that of Blaise Pascal, and he says, let's think about what the implications are if God exists, and let's think about what the implications are if he doesn't exist, and let's see if we can find one way of acting that'll satisfy both contingencies. Logical guy. And he says, well, if the gods don't exist and the world is just atoms and the void, if you think back to Professor Stalloff's lecture about early primitive physical theories, well, we have atoms and the void, homogeneous stuff called matter, and then the space that it moves around in. Well, if there are no gods and there is no moral order to the world and we're just atoms in the void, well, then what difference does it make what happens to you or anybody else? So you come into being, you go out of being. So what? You get healthy, you get sick. So what? There's nothing to get excited about because, well, it's just atoms in the void. Don't be afraid of it. It is what it is. There's nothing to be afraid of. You could say that Roman Stoicism is a way of telling people there's nothing to be afraid of. Nothing can happen to you in nature that is not a part of nature. And nature contains nothing fearful for the rational soul. Now let's take the other half of the Pascalian alternative. Let's consider the proposition that there are gods or a god. Doesn't matter whether it's monotheistic or polytheistic. If there are gods, then they must be rather like the gods of Socrates. They are all good, they are all wise, they are all completely moral and completely virtuous and completely knowing and completely excellent. Would creatures like this do anything bad to you? Well, maybe they would. Maybe if you've been doing bad stuff, maybe there is something actually in store for you later on. There may well be a Hades. Gods like that may want to create moral order in the world and dish out to the bad people of the world just what they have coming to them. But suppose, hypothetically, you lived according to reason and according to nature and according to the universal law of the Logos. Would the gods hurt a man like that, or would a man like that be a friend of the gods? And if a man like that would be dealt with fairly by the gods, justly by the gods, and well by the gods will do you no harm. So there are two possibilities. Either the world is atoms in the void, the world is just stuff, in which case there's nothing to be afraid of because you're just part of that stuff and you might as well go along with the flow. Relax. Enjoy the ride. Nothing to be scared of, nothing to get excited about. On the other hand, and this, I suspect, deep down in Marcus is what he really believes. I mean, when you just read between the lines and find out what the man himself is like, he does basically believe in the gods, even though he doesn't know. If he had to place a wager either way, same way as Pascal, but perhaps not for the same reasons, he would say, yes, I believe in the gods. And if the gods exist, then they create moral order, and they are perfectly moral themselves, and they are perfectly just and good and righteous themselves, and they will do you no harm. So if there is an afterlife, and you behave well, the gods will do you no harm, because you deserve no harm done to you. If
so again, Tax, right onto the point we were expressing before, who cares what the afterlife really is, right? We could sit and superstitiously and deliberate all day and all week and all month and all year about what might happen after we pass away, if there's going to be a place of judgment, a Tartarus, so to speak, or a purgatory, right? We could speak on this all day and we can speculate all we would like, but at the end of the day, you'll never know. So the best thing you can do is just live correctly. If you just live correctly, you eliminate the worries about whether or not you'll go to a good place when you pass. Just focus on doing what's right. Because even if there is no place after, don't you still want to do what's right here now? At the end of the day, that's just correct, right? You either help what's on this planet, or actually, we'd argue that if you're doing it specifically to go somewhere in the afterlife afterwards, well, now this is self-interested. You're actually only doing this for yourself. You're only helping people because you think you're going to get something out of it in the afterlife. So is this not in itself self-interest? That's a problem just alone, right? So we should always just be doing the right thing. There doesn't need to be a reason behind it. Just do what's right. Do what is good. Don't overthink what is correct and what is moral and virtuous. Just act upon it. The second you see something and you believe it to be such, act upon that rather than speculate and deliberate and well, what if this, what if that, right? Which is what a skeptic would do. So be a stoic. Act upon these things. And don't do things that are pleasure-seeking or that can turn into habitual vices. This is a very simple worldview and something that if we all adopted this, every single man that is watching this, that understands the place that we're in, if all of those men adopted this worldview and this behavior, every single one of those men would be able to help society. And if we all were helping society, we would have a better society. We wouldn't be living in the place we are today. Again, the reason our society is failing, we can't solely blame the Jew, right? The Jew is certainly a influential factor in the decay of our society. But without our spineless, lacking men in the upper echelons of that society that are running things, without those men that are easily corruptible, the Jew would not be able to corrupt us. So be that incorruptible man. Be a man of solid spirit, of solid value, and we cannot be corrupted, right? It's very important, and it's something that we can all do. It's not an easy thing to do, and especially in this modern minefield of vices that are all around you, but it is something we all can do. So practice, read, study, educate, and we can all be like this. Right. No one is perfect. No one's going to be able to do this wholeheartedly their whole life, all day, every day, and never slip up. But we can all try to do the best that we can. And that is the greatest thing in God's eyes, whatever you view that God as, that is the greatest thing in his eyes, is following that natural order, doing what is best towards that natural order, and being a good individual. That is going to conclude today's stream, guys. We are coming up on the last 5 minutes of the show. Thank you all so much for tuning in today. Thank you for the support. We will be doing a bonus show tomorrow since we filled that bar up. We're going to be going live tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern. Ketzer will get to pick the kind of stream. Any last-minute investments, don't forget, guys. Ketzer is matching every single investment of this show all the way up to $500. So Big Bromans in the chat one more time, guys, for Ketzer, for such a very, very, very kind offer on his behalf. We greatly appreciate that here. You have definitely helped to garner a little extra support for the show today. That was very nice of you, my friend. Don't forget, guys, to follow me on all of my socials. Finances isn't the only way to help me. It's not the only way to spread this work and help me out. One of the greatest ways that you can support this show is just simply by sharing it. It's free to do. It doesn't take you any time at all. Just go hop onto Twitter, hop onto Gab, share my work around. You got a friend that is kind of looking into the Jews or looking into the corruption of society, show him one of my shows. Show him episode one of my Logos Academy series. That might be something that's helpful for him to see. Our aim here on this channel and in this little space here is specifically to educate. That's why we're here. We're here to educate people, uplift them with us as we educate ourselves and learn ourselves, because that's what we're all doing every day. We're all just evolving mentally, right? So as we're all evolving and bettering ourselves, we're trying to bring everyone else up with us. We don't want to do this alone. So bring as many people as you can on board. Let's keep waking people up, all right? Thank you guys again so much for tuning in. Thank you for all the support on the show. I will catch you guys live tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern. And we'll be bringing whatever kind of show Ketzer chooses. I'll message him tonight and get his final takes. Thank you again, guys. I greatly appreciate it. We're going to outro with a little bit of classical music, as usual. And thank you as well for all of those folks listening over on Speak Free Radio. This is episode number 6 for Speak Free Radio, which we title as Podcast Streams. So enjoy the music, folks, and enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening. I will see you guys tomorrow.